Raised on D&D Podcast helps to enrich your family's gaming experience by bringing you interviews with parents, educators, game designers, and influencers. Join us as we delve into the many ways that tabletop role-playing games inspire creativity, develop communication skills, and create long-lasting bonds among players. Your host has been an avid gamer since childhood, and now his kids are being raised on D&D. Here is your host, Nick Cardarelli.
Welcome back, gamers. I'm your host, Nick Cardarelli, and this is Raised on D&D. My next guest is from Pinellas County, Florida. He posts and shares a lot about running after-school D&D games and church youth group D&D games. He's a teacher and a pastor using TTRPGs for education and spirituality. He is also very active with Geek Therapeutics. He's the host of D&D for the Deconstructed, an actual play podcast launching in October. Please welcome Ryan McLaughlin. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, Nick. Thanks so much for having me on this evening.
Man, I'm so excited about all the stuff you got coming out, and can't wait to talk about D&D for the Deconstructed. But before we jump into all of that, can you take us back to the very first experience you had playing tabletop role-playing games or Dungeons & Dragons?
Oh, man. So I was not lucky enough to have been raised on D&D myself, I'm sad to say. I wanted to be. I wanted to play Dungeons & Dragons so badly as a kid. I kept hearing all these things about, oh, my goodness, you can be a knight, you can be a wizard, you fight dragons. That was right up my alley. That sounded amazing. Unfortunately, I was growing up at the tail end of what we now call the Satanic Panic, and my mom, my youth pastor, they were convinced that playing Dungeons and Dragons was a one-way ticket to getting possessed by the devil himself. So I was forbidden. I didn't get to play it as a kid. I did get to play it as an adult after I had begun my teaching career. A coworker of mine, her boyfriend and I were actually chatting at a Christmas party one year and just got to talk. And he mentioned that he was starting up a new campaign. This was about 8 or 9 years ago, actually, right after fifth edition had just come out, and said, man, would you like to join my campaign? I was like, I've been waiting since I was a little kid. Yeah, absolutely. Let's do this. And, man, I had a blast that first evening just with session zero and character creation and all that. We played, Order of the Dragon Queen, that first full campaign that came out for fifth edition. It was so much fun and I haven't looked back since. It's been 8 or 9 years of this becoming one of my great passions.
That is fantastic. Yeah, I remember the dark days of secret handshakes and meeting in basements. I'm from that era myself. You have jumped in 9 years now gaming, playing fifth edition. Ryan, you're also a husband and a father. Is that right?
I am.
How many children do you have and how old are they?
I have 3 kids and they are 12, 10, and 9.
Fantastic. Mine are little stair steps too. They're a little bit older now. I got a 17-year-old, a 16-year-old, and a 15-year-old. And so how old were they when you started playing tabletop role-playing games with them?
Yeah. So believe it or not, my oldest, who's 12 now, like I mentioned, he started asking me about it when he was about 7. So I think a lot earlier than folks tend to think is possible with Dungeons and Dragons, right? And to be fair, you know, when he was 7, we started off with simple stuff like the dungeon exclamation point board game that's out there for the younger folks. And we had a great time. And that year he even asked for a Dungeons and Dragons themed birthday party. He was so into it. So he's been my Dungeons and Dragons buddy for about 5 years now. I think if you asked him today, he would probably tell you that he actually prefers Call of Cthulhu. Mm-hmm. But he still loves Dungeons & Dragons. I am DMing a campaign for him and his buddies at church right now. We're wrapping up Curse of Strahd, believe it or not, which is a lot for a middle school group. But here we are. We're having a great time. My youngest, he just got into it this past year. They just finished up Lost Minds of Phandelver, which was a great experience for him and his buddies. And after finishing that up, they asked me if I would homebrew a campaign set in the world of the Owl House, which I don't know if you're familiar with that. Your kids are older, but it's a fantastic Disney show that honestly is pretty tailor-made to being a Dungeons and Dragons campaign anyways. So it's been the easiest bit of homebrewing I've ever done. We just got started on that last month. So my middle child, my daughter, haven't quite gotten her hooked yet. She did play a game of Blades in the Dark with us not too long ago and said that it was, and I quote, okay. So we'll keep working there. But my oldest and my youngest are diehard fans, and it's a blast.
That is fantastic. And you're married as well. How long have you guys been married?
We had our 16th anniversary this summer.
Congratulations. And your wife, has she gotten to get to the game table as well?
Just within the past year herself, actually. She is currently in a campaign that I also get to play in, where my buddy Keith is DMing us through Rime of the Frostmaiden. And I like to tease her. She's a bit of a murder hobo. She's really there to kill everything in sight. I could tell you some stories, and it's brought out a side of her that I think many of our friends were surprised to see. And I was like, I've been trying to tell you guys, but she's also in a Call of Cthulhu campaign, and she's loving that as well. So she's starting to get more and more into it herself.
That is fantastic. I started mine off real young. They were about 4, 3, 2.5, something like that. I remember for the youngest, I had to get out the enlarged dice so he wouldn't choke. Yeah. I was left home alone with them. I had watched and of course the kids shows aged me a little bit, but I had watched all the Wiggles I could stand, and I was like, okay. We got to do something else. So I pulled out the maps and the minis, and we sat down, and they had an amazing time. And so I've been gaming now 30 plus years. And
that's awesome.
Thank you. And so being able to share that with the family really was this amazing experience. My wife and I decided this was something that we could do. We homeschooled our children. And so we wanted to go ahead and find something that we could do together as a family outside of schoolwork and things like that. So it really did a lot to bring us all together playing lots of games. And back in those days, there wasn't as many options. So we had to like take Pathfinder and 3.5 D&D and kind of water it down for them.
Sure.
And now there's all kinds of great options of games for younger kids. You've got Hero Kids. You've got Amazing Tales. You've got Playground Adventures. All kinds of great games that you can get, and they're actually geared towards younger players. And I think what's really, really fun when couples game together is seeing that other side of each other. I remember I introduced my wife to role-playing games, and I had her make up a character, and really we did a one-on-one kind of solo adventure to give her character a test run, and she made a gnome illusionist. She quickly realized, I don't really like this as much as I thought I was going to. I said, well, let's try a different character. And she ends up making a 7-foot wolf man who is this massive fighter, does amazing damage and all this stuff. And she just loved it and ran with it. So it really does like help bring out a different side in our partners. And we go, wow, where's all this coming from? And so it's a lot of fun. And Ryan, fast forward, you are you the youth pastor at your church or one of the youth pastors at your church?
Yeah, so I don't really have that official title. It's just kind of become, I serve as an assistant pastor. I preach occasionally. It kind of got started with my son a couple of years ago, my oldest, talking up Dungeons and Dragons to his buddies at church in the youth group, and them all saying, that sounds amazing. I went in on that. And so I said, okay, well, I'll DM for you. That sounds awesome. And it's taken off now. And we now have at our church 2 kids Dungeons and Dragons campaigns, 2 adult Dungeons and Dragons campaigns, an adult kid mixed Call of Cthulhu campaign, all in a shared multiverse that we call the Lexisverse. There's a great story behind that. 2 years ago when we were getting started with Dragons of Icefire Peak, my son's friend was making a paladin And I said, okay, well, paladins usually swear an oath to a deity of some kind. Do you have a deity in mind? And he thought about it for half a second. And he looks at Saul and says, I think his name is Lexus. And we were like, what? Okay, sure. Why not, man? Go for it. But it's evolved to this big shared universe that all of our official church games play in. We've got our own Discord server set up for the Lexusverse. And we've kind of created our own multiverse in which Lexus is the supreme god. And he's got lots of helpers and lots of followers, lots of enemies, too. The god of evil in our multiverse is the god Acura. That was a later addition that my son came up with. But it's really kind of taken off and becoming a part of the culture of our church. And we love it. It's so much fun.
That is incredible. Now, we've had a lot of pastors and rabbis and all kinds of people of faith on the show who have introduced tabletop role-playing games into their faith communities. So, Ryan, as someone who experienced the Satanic Panic firsthand, and myself being a survivor of it, how did your particular church feel about this sudden emergence of Dungeons and Dragons as an extracurricular activity?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say that my church group is pretty unique in that the vast majority of the congregation, not everybody, but the vast majority of the congregation is kind of like me in that we're all sort of in our late 30s. We're all raising kids that are roughly my kids' age. And we all grew up in kind of that stricter, more fundamentalist style of Christianity. And we all want to rethink that. And we all are trying to figure out what faith and life and spirituality and all that looks like, hanging on to what was good and trying to get rid of some of the less good parts. And so I think that we didn't experience any resistance whatsoever to Dungeons & Dragons. Like, I didn't have anybody say, like, oh, wait a second, are you teaching the kids witchcraft? Are you teaching them, you know, black magic, all that stuff? That didn't really happen in our church because we're, as a community, open to new experiences. And I think there was a lot of curiosity, especially on the part of other people my age who maybe had that same experience of not playing a whole lot because either, you know, youth pastor said it was the devil's game, or, you know, they were at a Christian college and, you know, they tried to play it a little bit in the dorm room under cover of night and all that stuff. But we're pretty unique in that regard, I think, though. We're not your typical faith community.
That is fantastic. And so you have this whole campaign going on with both adults and teens in your church. And how was it that you got involved with Geek Therapeutics?
Yeah, that's a great question. So as I started a couple of years ago DMing for my son and his buddies, it became apparent really quickly that heavy stuff was going to come out at the table. And I think there are a lot of DMs, a lot of GMs who have had similar experiences where you all of a sudden find people using their characters as ways to just kind of talk about what's going on in their lives. And sometimes that's pretty heavy. And so I pretty quickly realized that I was out of my depth. I'm a teacher by training and by profession. I've spent about 14 years in education now. I've got a master's of education, but I don't have any training at all in being a therapist, being a counselor, anything like that. And so I was just kind of looking around the internet, trying to figure out what resources were out there, stumbled upon a conversation on a social media site between a couple of people talking about Geek Therapeutics. And I thought, oh my goodness, that's exactly what I need. And so I went to their website and immediately signed up for, they have a certificate program in being a therapeutic game master. And it's not just for therapists, although it seems like therapists heavily sign up. They do make a good portion of the population that signs up for it, but it's for everybody. It's for teachers. It's for parents. It's for anybody that is interested in this side of the tabletop role-playing game experience. And it was a fantastic experience. I learned a ton. I became not just someone who was equipped to deal with these emotional things, but also someone who I feel like I'm a better game master as a result of what I learned. And so I decided before the end of the certificate program that I wanted to stay involved. And so I reached out to Alicia, who is the wonderful director of education there at Geek Therapeutics, and said, keep me involved. I want to be a part of this. And it's been amazing to stay involved with them. They brought me back as a guest GM. Each of their cohorts will have a guest GM come in at least once to either train them in a different VTT or train them in a different system altogether. For me, that's mostly been training folks on how to play Call of Cthulhu, which has been awesome. One of our favorite games as a family, as I mentioned earlier. I've also had the opportunity to work the booth at a couple of cons with them and had a blast. And Alicia, who I now consider a dear friend, she is actually going to be my co-host on the D&D for the Deconstructed podcast. So we're staying in it together, and it's been a blast, and I can't wait to see what the next few months hold.
That's fantastic. Now, we've had a lot of big names in geek therapy on the show. Dr. Megan Connell and Adam and Adam from Game to Grow. And it's been really amazing for me to see how tabletop role-playing games have been used in so many different ways. Education, in therapy, in spirituality, like what you're doing out at church. All of those things, all those different avenues that games like Dungeons and Dragons have been able to use to help people. And in parenting, one of the things that I think is amazing when you're talking about the therapeutic side of tabletop role-playing games is you're absolutely right. Players will start to kind of bleed through their character onto the table, right?
And absolutely.
As a parent, it can be incredibly useful when you're gaming with your children. If your children are in 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week at school, and then the weekend is being taken up with extracurriculars like sports or dance or anything like that, you start to feel that disconnect. And you kind of feel like, other than being an Uber and a chef, how am I involved with my children on a personal level? And especially when they get to junior high, high school age, it really starts, that gap starts to get bigger and bigger, it feels like, as parents. So I think that one of the things that you can kind of take the temperature of the household is when you're gaming together, and you can kind of throw some scenarios out there and kind of see how they're responding. Maybe there's things going on in their life that they don't want to tell you about. They don't want you to worry about, right? Kids are always trying to protect their parents, which is always surprising to us, right? It's like, no. Hey, open up to me, open up to me. And they're like, no. I don't want to bother you with what's going on the school bus or what's going on in the classroom or in between, you know, those kind of things. So I think when you're gaming together, some of those things can come out. Some of those things can come to the surface. But more importantly, when you're sharing this game experience together and you're communicating through NPCs and through characters, it's amazing how when we get away from the table, how much more open that communication can be. Now, Ryan, have you experienced something similar to that? Have you, in your experience, have you seen that is the case in your home?
I would say that it has definitely deepened my relationship with my own children. I would say that it has given me some amazing opportunities with my boys in particular we do a lot of homebrewing together. Like my sons love having TTRPGs as a creative outlet, and they'll want to have that as a shared experience with me, right? So they'll come to me and say, like, Dad, I've got this idea for a one shot. Will you help me get it together? Will you help me figure out how to stat this monster? Will you help me, just write things out in a playable format? My son and I are actually, my oldest and I are co-writing a one shot that we're hoping to spin out in the next month or two for the Old Gods of Appalachia game that Monte Cook Games just released this summer, which is a fantastic horror game if you're in the market for one of those. So it's deepened our bond and allowed us to have a shared, not just a shared hobby, but a shared creative outlet, which gives us the opportunity to communicate on some pretty deep levels, I think. So I don't know if that exactly answered your question, but to me, that's what popped immediately into my mind when you were talking just now about taking the temperature in the room and getting a feel for how the family's doing, because it definitely puts us shoulder to shoulder and allows us to create together in ways that I'm not sure that every parent gets to do with their child all the time. And that's pretty special and something I'm pretty grateful for.
That is fantastic. So, Ryan, tell us about how you've come up with the idea for D&D for the Deconstructed and what that podcast is going to look like starting off in October.
Yeah, for sure. So I personally believe that just as Dungeons and Dragons and other tabletop RPGs are great vehicles for exploring that therapeutic side of things, I also think they're great vehicles for exploring the spiritual side of things. And one of the phenomena that is incredibly common in my generation of folks who were raised in the church, who were raised in a more fundamentalist or evangelical spiritual background, is this phenomena of deconstruction. And that word gets tossed around a lot and means a lot of different things to different people. But I think in broad brushstrokes, we can say that it's about questioning and it's about rethinking and it's about trying to figure out what roles, if any, faith and spirituality are going to play in your life after you've decided that I don't agree with what I was raised with anymore necessarily. And I have personally found in my own life Dungeons and Dragons to be a powerful vehicle for exploring that side of myself, whether it be through a druid or a cleric or some other PC that has that more spiritual bent to them, or whether it be through playing in a campaign that directly addresses questions of faith. I think the Eberron setting is great for that. On our podcast, we're going to be doing that a lot. We're going to be starting off with an actual playthrough of Curse of Strahd. We're going to be doing Beth the Bard's rewrite of Curse of Strahd. She is the Ancient, which does a lot of gender bending and exploration of sexuality and stuff like that. And we're going to format it such that we'll have about 4 or 5 episodes of at a time of actual play, followed by an episode of reflection and discussion, where we'll kind of highlight the themes that are brought out in the game. And for anyone in the audience that knows Curse of Strahd, I think you know it is one big crisis of faith from start to finish. So we'll have lots and lots to talk about, and it's going to be a really entertaining time, I think. Like I said earlier, Alicia is going to be the co-host. She's Director of Education at Geek Therapeutics and just an incredibly intelligent, thoughtful, well-spoken person who has gone through her own experiences in this realm. Our senior pastor at my church is going to be playing, what did he tell me he had picked? Like a Circle of Stars druid is what he said he's going to be playing. My dear friend Keith, who is both a theater major and a computer programmer by trade, so he's a jack of all trades, he's going to be our paladin. Alicia, I think, is going to be playing a cleric, which is awesome. And then we'll have another therapist, Crystal, on with us, who is going to be playing a warlock. So we'll have the full cast together. It'll be amazing. We're going to go through a very, very different take on that classic Ravenloft campaign. And we'll be diving into the deep end in terms of spirituality and loss of faith and religion and all that good stuff. So we're going to have a great time. And I would invite all your listeners out to the party. We're going to have a hoot.
It sounds phenomenal and an amazing cast lineup. I know that it's launching in October. Great for the spooky season. So Absolutely. How frequent are we planning on the episodes coming out? Is it going to be every other week, every week, once a month?
What we're planning on doing is at the beginning of October, which is, as you mentioned, spooky season, when Strahd is at the height of her powers, and Beth the Bard's rewrite of the campaign. We are going to do a 5-episode drop where you'll get to hear 4 episodes of actual play, followed by one of our reflection episodes. And then after that, we are planning on dropping once a week. And like I said, it'll be about 4 or 5 episodes of actual play, followed by a reflection. We'll kind of get into that monthly routine.
I think best parts about the format, and I'm so excited to listen to the podcast, not only to hear this new gender bent Curse of Strahd, where the big bad guy is actually a lady vampire instead of the count. It'll be a countess. But also on top of that, the reflections, what kind of format is it going to have? Is the whole cast going to be there, or is it just you and the co-hosts are going to go over the reflections? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's going to be the whole cast. And like I said, I think the Ravenloft setting gives you so much to talk about in this area anyways. And so we're just going to talk about the themes that come up in the game. We're going to talk about experiences in our own lives, our own views of spirituality and deconstruction. We're going to talk about what it's like to see those two things kind of bleed together a little bit in the game and process things together, and kind of do a little bit of a debrief and an unwind, because for those of you that have played through a Ravenloft campaign before, you know it can be an extremely intense experience. It will be an opportunity to just really go in deeper and really get to the heart of things. Beth the Bard's rewrite of Curse of Strahd is just absolutely brilliant from beginning to end. I don't want to sell it short by just calling it a gender-bent Strahd, because it's so much more than that. To give you an idea, like, her guide to it, which is the best $20 I ever spent, is over 200 pages. And it's really a complete reimagining of the campaign in some ways. And, you know, you hate to blaspheme Curse of Strahd in this way, but in some ways it's a vast improvement over the original campaign. Wow. And again, it's not just, hey, look, we changed all these genders. It's also like a rethinking of story beats, plot structure. I don't know if you've had the pleasure of reading the Curse of Strahd book for 5e. I may be so bold as to say the book is a little bit of a hot mess. And were it not for the extremely generous Curse of Strahd subreddit community, I think my first time running of it would have been a disaster, because I couldn't make heads or tails of some of the chapters. But Beth the Bard has rethought those chapters in a way that it removes a lot of the problematic elements. You know, Curse of Strahd and 5e had a lot of, let's be honest, there's a lot of racism there. There was a lot of misogyny there. There's a lot of things that I think a modern table doesn't want or need in their games, right? And so she hasn't just removed those elements, though. She's added positive elements, and I think has proven once and for all that the vampire genre doesn't need to be racist and misogynistic to tell a great story. And like I said, best $20 I ever spent. Hop on DM's Guild ASAP if you're in the market for something like that, because it's amazing.
Fantastic. And Ryan, you mentioned playing different games. And I know that that's a big thing that you've tried to do, is kind of show other people that if sword and sorcery, Dungeons and Dragons isn't your thing, there's all kinds of other genres out there that can speak to different people. And so if someone's reluctant to play tabletop role-playing games because they just can't get their heads wrapped around wizards and dragons, there's all kinds of other options. Tell us a little bit about the different games that you run and that you encourage other people to try.
Absolutely. There's a whole world of games out there, like you said. And I have been a huge fan personally of Call of Cthulhu. I've mentioned that several times already. If you are into the fiction of H.P. Lovecraft or Stephen King or any sort of eldritch horror, give that a try. It's a classic. It's been around for 40 years. It's in its seventh edition now. It's an absolute blast. For introducing new folks, this is going to sound really cliche to folks that have been around the TTRPG world for a while, but Powered by the Apocalypse games are awesome. Powered by the Apocalypse / Forged in the Dark games, they come in any genre that you could possibly imagine. I've been running a Forged in the Dark game called Scum and Villainy recently, and it's basically, you know, Scum and Villainy based off of that great Obi-Wan quote from A New Hope, Mos Eisley, you will never see a more wretched hive of scum and villainy. So it's kind of a Star Wars knockoff. The team has a beat up old ship that you're trying to get some cash to repair and make improvements on and stuff like that. You go on heists. It's got so many great mechanics that are unique to it. Well, I should say unique to the Forged in the Dark ecosystem of games. It's a blast, but another great branch of games that I've just recently gotten into running and playing in is the Cypher System by Monty Cook Games. That's the system that Old Gods of Appalachia that I mentioned earlier is based off of. And that game system is just absolutely fantastic for anyone that is more interested in the narrative side of things and less interested in the blow-by-blow combat side of things. So if you've played a D&D game and you've thought like, man, I really want to do more role playing and less, I slash you with my sword. Well, I do the try out a Cypher system game. And again, that's another, family of games that comes in all sorts of genres. We were talking about games for little kids earlier. They've got a great game called No Thank You Evil that I think is pitched right around that 5, 6, 7 year old set. That's very much worth checking out for all the parents in the audience. I would say if you've got a favorite genre that's not sword and sorcery, there's probably an amazing game out there for you. And just take a look.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've played dozens of different RPGs. I can actually run about 8 or 9 different systems well. And we actually introduced our children to Call of Cthulhu just a couple of Octobers ago, nice, for spooky season. And we played the classic, the free adventure that's on Chaosium's website. I believe it's the Haunting, the Haunted. And then, my good friend John Hook, who's a Call of Cthulhu writer, he wrote a sequel to that. And we got to play that the following October. And so that was a lot of fun because there was continuity there. And they were able to play that free standalone. And then we played John Hook's module for Call of Cthulhu and played that. And really, after the first one, my oldest, she wanted to become a keeper. And she thought that this was a game that she could really get into. My middle one started reading H.P. Lovecraft, really enjoys the mythos. And then, well, after the second adventure, the first adventure was that fun, spooky time scare. And the second adventure was a little more, and we're out because we were super, super scared. And so that was very, very cool. And they had a great time. And so we've gotten to try lots of games throughout the years, not only when they were little, but now that they're teens, getting to play some more mature games and some darker games to explore those kind of avenues and things like that. So all around incredible. I think Dungeon Masters, as you are learning new systems and you're learning new games and trying out new settings, I think it helps you grow as a game master thing.
I like that a lot. I want to go back to something that you said about your oldest daughter wanting to try out being a keeper. I've personally found that, I don't know if you would agree with this, there are a lot of systems out there that are easier for first-time GMs to run than D&D 5e. And I think that, you know, I love D&D 5e. Like I said, I run 4 different D&D 5e games at the moment. I've got, you know, 3 church groups and 1 after school group. I love it with all my heart. I play it multiple times a week. It's not easy to run, and that's one of its faults, right? I personally have found that being a keeper for a Call of Cthulhu game is significantly easier, especially if you're into horror anyways. But part of that is the rules just make a lot of intuitive sense. And there's not a lot of classes to keep track of. There's not a lot of races to keep track of. But also, Chaosium does a really fantastic job usually of setting up their modules to be easy to run. Like I do, I'm running Horror on the Orient Express right now for the first time.
Oh, okay.
Which I'm having an absolute blast doing. That's the church group that's got the mix of adults and kids in it, and we're having a blast. I only have to read through a chapter one time, and then it's there. I've got it. I'll take a few notes while I'm going through it or whatever, but I give it a single read through and I'm ready to run it. I can't say that about a lot of 5e modules.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would definitely encourage parents, teachers, whoever you've got in your audience that's thinking about running a game for the first time, especially for younger folks, and you've got all of their needs on your mind as well as you're trying to figure out how to run a game for the first time, think about something other than 5e. I know that's a terrible thing to say. Like I said, I love 5e with all my heart, but if you're nervous about running a game for the first time, think about Call of Cthulhu. Think about a Powered by the Apocalypse game. Think about a Cypher System game. Think about some other system that is going to do something like, well, the Powered by the Apocalypse games and the Cypher System will both not make you roll a dice ever as a GM. You just get to focus on your players and the story, right? Think about running a system that's going to be easier on you as a GM for your first time doing it. I didn't have that luxury myself. I jumped right into the deep end because I had a lot of kids demanding Dungeons and Dragons by name. Thanks, Stranger Things. But, you know, I would definitely recommend, like, there's a whole universe out there, and some of that universe is going to be significantly easier for new folks, even though it's not quite as ubiquitous as Dungeons and Dragons.
And I think what's fantastic about games that either take place in a modern time period, like a superhero game or a kind of a thriller crime game, that sort of thing, or a historical game like Call of Cthulhu, you can play modern or you can play it through any time period, of course, but it's most popular for the 20s and 30s and 40s. So with those games, I find it so much more interesting because of the historical aspect. I can actually pull photos of clothing, of cars, of even locations, and be able to bring those into the game and say, hey, this is what this looks like. This is the kind of car you guys are driving or you saw. Pulling up a map of New York or Chicago or Boston or Atlanta and being able to lay that down, or London, and be able to say, okay, this is where you guys are in the city. Where do you want to go? It adds a whole other element to the game that that fantasy can't do. And it makes it just a whole other layer for the players.
And that's another area where Chaosium really shines. When you look at their module, one of the things that they do for their Call of Cthulhu games is include handouts of the very sort of thing that you're talking about, right? You've got the handouts of, you know, the letters, the last wills and testaments, the, you know, the clues that you find on scene and all that stuff. But you've also got handouts of, in the case of our game, a map of Paris in 1923, which is great. And it just, you know, copies of old photographs, like you said, copies of newspaper headlines to really set the mood of what's going on in this place and time that we're inserting horrible creatures into, but we're keeping a little bit of historical accuracy as we go along the way, right?
That's right.
They do a fantastic job of that. And that's another element that I think really lends itself to new GMs in particular, of being able to really spice up that experience for your players by saying, and here's the map, and here's the letter, handing out something, especially if you're around a physical table, but even online, you know, hey, I'm going to drop a map into the chat. This is where you're at. It just adds a whole nother element to it.
Ryan, thank you so much for everything that you've been doing with the gaming community, helping people find the joy of tabletop role-playing games, not only helping bring kids together after school and at youth group, but also helping adults find it and other parents and kids together. I think that's amazing. And we're so excited about D&D for the Deconstructed. Can't wait for that series to start, and can't wait to subscribe and listen. I hope the folks who are listening give it a shot. And all the work that you're doing with Geek Therapeutics, all of that stuff, just making the community that loves tabletop role-playing games so much better. Ryan, thank you so much for all of what you're doing.
Man, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of Raised on D&D Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow on all your favorite apps and social media.